This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Chicago taxpayers could be on the hook to pay nearly $34 million for just 3 police misconduct settlements. City Council is set to vote on them today, but the expense doesn't end here. Between 2019 and last year, similar cases cost well over $400 million. The Chicago Police Department is under a consent decree. That's a set of court-ordered reforms that are meant to reduce civil rights violations. So, how much progress has been made? And why don't the settlements ever seem to stop? For answers, we chatted yesterday with attorney Sheila Betty. She's the director of Northwestern's Community Justice and Civil Rights Clinic. And we also talked with WBEZ criminal justice editor Patrick Smith. Nearly $34 million in payouts were up for discussion in City Council, but this sounds like a headline we read relatively often. So I began by asking Patrick his thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, there were $15 million in payouts in September, $50 million last summer. Chicago law makes it so the city council has to approve all legal payouts over $100,000. So
yeah,
there are actually all sorts of smaller payouts that we just never hear about. But these big payouts you're talking about, they get a finance committee hearing. They make headlines like you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And as you're saying, they add up. I mean, last year, the city spent a record $150.8 million on legal costs tied to claims against CPD. That includes settlements, judgments, outside counsel, legal expenses. And actually, you know, you're talking about $34 million. That's 3 cases with alleged misconduct. There's actually another $4.5 million that the city council is going to vote on for of a woman who was hit by a driver who was fleeing police. Another $100,000 for a child who was injured when a police commander hit him with his car. Mm-hmm. So we're actually closer to almost $40 million in police-related payouts. Wow. They're going to vote on tomorrow.
That is a lot. I want to zoom in, though, on that $34 million mm-hmm. that we're talking about here on the table. As you teased there, it is tied to 3 pretty notorious officers who seem to just keep haunting Chicago taxpayers. Talk more about that.
Yeah, you know, I'll go in ascending order of settlement.
All right.
The city's set to pay $7.5 million to Clarissa Glenn and Ben Baker. They were wrongfully arrested and then convicted. They were wrongfully arrested by former CPD Sergeant Ronald Watts and his team. Watts was investigated by the FBI for extorting drug dealers and others and framing people who wouldn't pay what he called the tax. Baker said he wouldn't bribe Watts.
Yeah.
And so he got these false charges put on him. Watts eventually went to federal prison, I should say. After that, the city is set to pay $8.75 million to Mark Maxson. He was convicted of the sexual assault and murder of a child. Mm-hmm. Years later, cleared by DNA evidence. He says he was coerced into a false confession by detectives who worked for notorious former commander John Burge, who, as I'm sure most listeners know, oversaw a torture regime.
Mm-hmm. They know that name, for
they
sure.
They do know that name. And then finally, $7.5 million for Thomas Sierra. He was convicted of a drive-by shooting, but then freed. He got a certificate of innocence. He says former detective Reynaldo Guevara fabricated evidence against him. So those 3 names, Ronald Watts, John Burge, Reynaldo Guevara, those are 3 names that listeners probably have heard before, all tied to lots and lots of claims of wrongful convictions or other misconduct, in lawsuits and other claims.
Let's bring you in here, Sheila. Police misconduct, as we know, it's largely what brought about the consent decree, which is, as I said, the court order that was put in place back in 2019 in order to reform how CPD officers are trained and disciplined.
But how would you characterize how successful this consent decree has been so far?
Well, the consent decree was never going to be a panacea. And it wasn't going to be some sort of magic bullet that was going to turn around the Chicago Police Department immediately. That being said, Chicago's consent decree compliance progress has been incredibly slow going. And there has been a real sense from the organizations and communities that I represent that it's turned into an exercise in checking boxes, pushing paper, and not the kind of transformational change that's required to start saving taxpayer dollars, not to mention stopping the incredible amounts of harm that the Chicago Police Department has imposed on Chicago's Black and Brown communities.
Yeah.
So when we look at things like gun pointing is a significant issue. There were the fact that CPD officers don't have a policy, don't have training that aligns with best practices. We can expect to see additional litigation coming out of those failures. So we can look at the monitor's reports. The most recent one was in November of 2024, and we can see that there has been some improvement, but on these really foundational issues like gun pointing, like reviewing officer use of force, the use of body cameras, impartial policing, ending racial profiling. In all of these areas, CPD continues to miss the mark. And that's a moral failing, right? That means that people are being affirmatively harmed, but it also is going to have serious economic consequences for our city, because these type of lawsuits that Patrick just discussed, they're not going to go away so long as CPD is failing to meet the requirements of the consent decree.
Yeah. Sheila, I want to get your line fixed so that we can hear your responses much clearer. So I'm going to pivot back to Patrick for just a moment until we get you settled. Talk more, Patrick, about how much has been fully implemented here when it comes to the consent decree.
A very small amount. I'd have to go look it up. I believe the last time the monitor gave a report, it was about 9% that they had gotten to fully implementing of the consent decree. There's been a lot of great reporting here at BEZ, but also, you know, especially at WTTW about the incredibly slow progress that, you know, really total lack of progress. You know, if you ask CPD, they would say, hey, you know, we are at least, we have preliminary compliance on a lot more than that. We're doing our best. But if you talk to experts, if you talk to people like Sheila and her clients, they will tell you that the progress has just been way too slow.
Is there any hope? I mean, just from what you've witnessed so far, Patrick, you've got that closer lens on things. Any hope of getting CPD to where it needs to be in time?
Well,
there's a deadline.
Yes, there is a deadline. You know, I don't know. You know, they've extended the deadline, you know, and the people who are extending that presumably have a plan in place for how they could actually get to where they're supposed to be by that deadline.
Yeah.
You know, these do take a long time. The progress has been very slow. I mean, if you read the monitoring reports in federal court, you know, she says the progress has been very slow. People who've been watching this from the outside say there just isn't really a lot of political will at CPD to actually make changes. But it's not hopeless. You know, I'd love to hear when Sheila's line is fixed, whether or not she's given up hope, whether the people she works with who are most affected by this have given up hope. But these do take a long time.
Right.
I don't think, I don't know, people are saying, well, this is, well, actually, I have heard from some people who've said this is just not going to work.
Right.
I'd love to hear what Sheila thinks about that.
Yeah, Sheila, I mean, good question there from Patrick. Have you and your clients given up hope in this process?
Well, I'm going to quote Miriam Kaba, who is an abolitionist thinker and organizer, who says, hope is a discipline. So I don't think anyone has given up hope, but I think we are confronting the realities of policing in this country and also in Chicago, which is it's an inherently violent, racist institution that is going to take more than a court order to turn things around. It is going to take political will. But it's also going to take paying attention to some of the specific details that have just eluded the CPD. You know, for example, firearm pointing, the fact that we are a police department that does not have a policy that adheres to best practices when it comes to when officers can point their guns, body cam footage. We don't have the kind of review process that's necessary to hold accountable officers that may be engaging in problematic low-level uses of force. Community engagement, CPD still failing to ensure that the expertise of those directly affected by policing is incorporated in these changes. Mm-hmm. So these are either they're critically important, but relatively low-hanging fruit that we would expect to see progress on at this point in the consent decree. The other big part of the consent decree that really remains unaddressed are the provisions related to impartial policing, which have to do with discrimination, racial profiling, the issues with gender and LGBTQ folks who interact with the police. Again, these are foundational issues that led to the existence of this decree, and we would expect to see much more progress. And I'll say that the organizations and communities that I work with that have the right to enforce this decree are not going anywhere, are not going to back down on their power to enforce this decree, and believe that this must speed up. And if it doesn't, of course it's going to cost taxpayers more money, but it's also going to affect people's lives. And behind every single settlement that city council approved is a life that was harmed, destroyed, taken away because of the intransience of the Chicago Police Department. And I want to make sure we don't lose sight of this. Mm-hmm. It's easy to get caught up in the policies and the procedures, but the reality is that people's lives have been taken, people have had decades of incarceration because of the systemic failures of the Chicago Police Department. That's what this decree is about.
So Patrick, as I mentioned there, city council is set to approve this money tomorrow. It's a big chunk, though, of how much the city has budgeted for police payouts, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's honestly putting it mildly. And I don't want to lose sight of what Sheila was just talking about, that these payouts are linked to real people
who have lives.
Whose lives have either been, ended or forever upended by misconduct or alleged misconduct. But I do think the money paints a picture, too. The payouts set to be approved tomorrow, they represent about half of what the city has budgeted for the entire year for police payouts.
And we're just in January.
Yeah, we're 2 weeks into the year. In one meeting, the council will likely approve about $40 million in payouts tied to police. The city has budgeted $83 million for the entire year.
So what happens if we get past that?
Well, they're just going to go into other reserves. And frankly, it's continuing a pattern that has been going on for years. I mean, to be clear, the city knew this was a problem. Our colleague Chip Mitchell reported on this in November. He asked the mayor's office, CPD, the budget office about it. I mean, you and I know Chip. He showed his work. He gave them detailed questions. This was before the budget was passed. He said, you guys are continuing a practice of $83 million budgeted exactly for CPD payouts, even though everybody knows the cost is going to be higher. I mean, last year the payouts were $150 million. Year before that, $126 million. Year before that, $98 million. Mm-hmm. In each of those years, the budgeted amount was $83 million. It is just a total fiction. It is a lie. And it matters. This is not just, it matters because it's part of painting an inaccurate picture of what alleged police misconduct costs the city.
Very interesting. I mean, I mentioned earlier, Sheila, that the officers involved in these misconduct cases, they're notorious. Patrick sort of gave us that list there. But I think that the framing could make it seem like this is all in the past, right? These cases and the misconduct that's at issue here, it spans decades, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, generations. And that's one of the reasons why the consent decree is not going to be a panacea. Nobody expected it to go into effect and for it to change the department tomorrow because of how longstanding these patterns and practices have been. But we see some of the same systemic issues that allowed these notorious officers to operate for as long as they did existing today. And by that, I mean not having the kind of quality control measures of reviewing body cam footage randomly, doing those sorts of audits, not having the kind of use of force review set up so that officers are both learning from their mistakes and people are protected from officers that are more apt to choose violence instead of de-escalation. Mm-hmm. The kind of built-in supervision, systemic accountability that allowed these officers that are costing taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars are still not fixed. And without that kind of built-in system, systemic accountability, discipline, and also the political will, of course, we can expect to see these types of lawsuits to continue.
Even beyond the consent decree and the need to reform the police department, just for financial reasons, there are things that the city could be doing to reduce liability, right? I mean, why isn't there more pressure on CPD to bring down legal costs, if nothing else?
Yeah, for so long, it seems like the cost of these lawsuits, which is also not a new thing, was just the cost of doing business. That CPD was going to be able to operate as it does with this legacy of racialized violence. Checks would be written and CPD would go on business as usual. The consent decree, because it has the force of the federal court, has the potential to be transformative, has the potential to be an interrupter. But the consent decree cannot be an interrupter so long as there's not political will for the kind of transformation that is necessary to end this cycle for once and for all.
You're nodding, Patrick.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great point by Sheila. And I also will say, I think that political will reflects, or the lack of political will, really is reflected in what these city council committee hearings are like. You know, I monitored the finance committee yesterday where they discussed the settlements. Really, almost no questions about these payouts. And part of that makes sense. Like, you know, the city attorneys have decided this is the way to save the most money. And that's not what I'm talking about. But there's just, everything is treated like, oh, yeah, this happened in the past, and, well, we're just going to pay this out. No questions, no real effort by city council members to ask, what are we doing to prevent this from happening again?
No outrage even?
Right, and it's just sort of like, oh yeah, we know that's bad. And I'm sure some of them would say, yeah, I know it sucks, but I don't need to grandstand every meeting about how Burge was bad or Guevara, you know, allegedly did some really bad things. And that to me makes sense. But there isn't, that I've seen in these kind of hearings, or very rarely, people saying, what are we doing to prevent this from happening again? Yeah, and again, I think people listening to this could hear it's been a very grim picture we're painting of CPD. I don't mean to paint with a really broad brush. Obviously, lots of great officers, lots of great detectives,
right?
Lots of great leadership. But what is the city doing right now to prevent misconduct, to prevent the next Guevara, the next Watts, whoever that is, the next sort of major scandal that in 10 years we're going to say, oh, yeah, well, in the early 2020s, this really horrible thing was happening, and now it's costing us a lot of money. I have not seen that kind of discussion happening among our political leaders.
Sheila, from your view, would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And just two quick points. One is that someone who's not paying close attention might just think that the city council is just handing out money to people. The reality is this money is being approved. These settlements are being approved after years of litigation where the city, more often than not, is hiring outside counsel to defend what, you know, I believe is indefensible. And that is an expenditure of taxpayer dollars that is unaccounted for when we see these headlines. So these city council settlements are happening most often after years of litigation where taxpayers have paid for attorneys that are defending the city, often against allegations that have been admitted by the city for decades. So that's one point I'll make. And the second one is that a few years ago, the Office of Inspector General issued a report about the risk management opportunities that exist within litigation. There are, of course, patterns. There are opportunities within the litigation process to identify officers who might need additional training, to identify officers who might be working in teams of people who are influenced by each other. And those recommendations by the Office of Inspector General that could address that question, why is this still happening, have never been implemented. Mm. So we are really missing a significant opportunity that these lawsuits could help stop this pattern. Because those recommendations from the Office of Inspector General were never implemented.
Yeah, that seems like a big missed opportunity there. What's Mayor Johnson saying about all this, Patrick?
You know, honestly, not much. Okay. I talked about Chip's story. He reached out with very specific questions for Mayor Johnson. His office did not answer what they're doing to reduce spending, why they're keeping the same budgeted amount, why the city has not had a chief risk officer since Lightfoot left office. Former Mayor Lori Lightfoot, I should say, left office. You know, lots of questions about, hey, what are you all doing? You know, the inspector general said if we're going to keep budgeting the same amount for settlements and payouts, that should mean we have a plan in place to reduce costs.
Right.
We don't have that plan.
There's no plan.
And Mayor Johnson hasn't put one forth.
So in this last minute we've got, Sheila, I just kind of want you to underscore what you brought up earlier, right? You're working often with these victims of police abuse. What do these settlements mean for them, for those people, those families who have been wronged by police officers?
Well, it's some semblance of justice. It's some semblance that the city is trying to make as right as it can within the context of our legal system. But it's also not enough, because every single person who has gotten a payout from the city has also signed an agreement where the city said, we accept no liability for what happened. So there still is such a need for healing among the hundreds of thousands of people who have been affected by CPD's racialized violence. And that is a story that is often not told when mm-hmm. we just see these headlines. The money is not going to give back 20 years of being wrongly incarcerated because of CPD's systemic failures.
We'll have to leave it there. We've been speaking with Sheila Betty, who's director of Northwestern Law School's Community Justice and Civil Rights Clinic, and WBEZ Criminal Justice Editor Patrick Smith. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Meha Ahmed and edited by Dan Tucker. It was mixed by Ari Mejia. On Reset, our conversations are all about keeping you informed and engaged in what's happening in Chicago, in our country, and in the world. To stay connected, make sure to subscribe or find us at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk again later today.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.